Hi. I'm Chris.
And I'm Alice.
And you're listening to Xena Made Me Gay.
And Chris is extremely disappointed in me.
In the times of brick phones, Tamagotchis, and curtain bangs, the 90s kids cried out for a badass. She was Xena, the warrior princess. The kicks, the moves, the nostalgia, the queerness. Xena made us gay.
Look!
And I would like to say that that happens rarely, but it doesn't. It happens almost every time we communicate.
Oh, you make me sound like a horrible person.
Or me, I don't know. It depends on which side you're on.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. So, what happened, dear listeners, is that, you know how we try to always come up with some engaging yet lighthearted banter at the beginning of each episode? Mm-hmm. I, Chris, have made great efforts to come up with an excellent topic for today. And I came up with it well in advance, mm-hmm, and put it in our lovely shared document that we use to prepare each of these episodes. Mm-hmm. And what do I find out the seconds before we're about to record? I found out that Alice entirely rejected.
I didn't entirely reject.
My lovely purple. Entirely rejected. And came up with something that has nothing to do with what my suggestion was. And didn't
That's
even.
A bit of an exaggeration.
Didn't even, like, put any notes in that document being like, oh, by the way, this is completely wrong. Nope, just like snug it in. You know how sometimes you do the assignment incorrectly and you're like, if I don't say anything and I just like pretend that everything is good, what if people just don't notice? Mm-hmm. And this is what happened.
If you're wondering what is the horrible thing I did, can you tell me the
I mean, it's more about what you didn't do, I'd say.
What is the horrible thing I didn't do?
So I think, so we haven't recorded in a while, right? Like at least a month.
Yep.
I think 2 months, actually.
I think 2 months, that's correct.
And for most of this time, I had the little like banter suggestion in our document. And the banter suggestion was, this is an episode that introduces basically the main villain of the series. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about our favorite TV villains. Three. I specifically said, let's come up with three of our favorite TV villains. Not 63. Not 163. Not 6,163. 1, 2, 3. Three villains. You're almost 40. You watch a lot of TV. And what did you do? Nothing. You came up with zero TV villains.
Recovering from the fact that you said that I'm almost 40. Just so that our listeners know, I don't look almost 30.
You look fantastic. That, like, I have no problem stating that. Like, you look incredible. You look better than me, like, for sure. Like, your skin looks beautiful. Mine has seen some shit. No problem admitting that. I was just stating a neutral fact that you have walked this earth for enough years to have watched at least a handful of TV shows containing villains that were good.
Let's say that. Most of the TV shows that I watch are about human drama, and there are no specific villains in them. No villains. Like, I was trying to remember. Newsroom, no villains. Sex Education, no villains. Even fucking Bridgerton doesn't have substantial villains. They have some, but they're stupid, and I cannot call them villains. For me, villains is like Hades from Hercules. That's a villain. Like Callisto is a villain. For me, there is a difference between a villain in like this archetype sort of sense, and just like a dude or dudette or theydette that happens to drive some negative shit in heroes' lives. You know what?
Yeah, totally fair. Totally fair.
Okay, let me think now. You state yours, and I'll think while you're talking.
Okay. So, dear listeners, I thought very hard, and I put a lot of effort into coming up with my list of the top three villains out of those TV shows that I have seen. Even though I've only been alive for slightly longer than 30 years, somehow I was able to come up with...
Stop driving stinks from my heart.
Okay, now I'm confused. Okay, I guess I understand why you might get upset at me mentioning that you're almost 40. But what's the problem with me mentioning my age?
Because in contrast, I seem even older.
This sounds like a you problem. So, when I think best villains of all time, there's one name that immediately comes to mind. So there's one villain where I immediately thought about him. I had no doubts. I was like, yep, this one. And that's Kilgrave from Jessica Jones, portrayed by David Tennant. It really, really worked well, I think, both how the character was written and how David Tennant portrayed him. It was extremely scary, but also engaging, but also with clear motivation and character traits. 10 out of 10. Like, I have absolutely no notes in terms of how amazing that villain was.
I came up with the three villains just so you wouldn't be mad at me.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. And it took you, what, like 20 seconds?
But
interesting.
I still am not sure that they're 100% villains, but we'll talk about it later. Let's
Oh, my God. Things are not black and white.
I hope that this feud is very entertaining. Otherwise, like, people are clicking off.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Like, we haven't heard from them.
The three people that decided to listen to this episode, they're like, fuck this. So the other two, I had to really think about, and... Uh-huh. I still am not like 100% committed to naming them as like the best villains of all time. It might be that I just haven't seen the shows that had better villains. But out of the shows that I personally have seen, those are the two that I came up with. The reason I'm kind of iffy is that one of the shows is ongoing. And another show greatly deteriorated in its quality during its time. So the one that is done is Lost, and the villain is Ben Linus. I think he was an incredible villain in season 2, mm-hmm. back when we knew basically nothing about him. And we just had this mystery box character, essentially.
And the actor was doing a fantastic job playing him.
Yeah, the actor was absolutely incredible. Michael Emerson just killed it. And for sure, some of the magic behind how good that villain was Michael Emerson just knocking it out of the park. I think that was an issue generally with the entire series, that like with time, Lost kept getting worse and worse.
Lost kept getting lost.
Yes, and so did Ben Linus. So I think already by season three, there are issues, and by the time that the series ends, we all are yearning for the sweet release of death. But I think the fair thing here is to still acknowledge how incredible he was at the beginning. And just because it got worse later doesn't necessarily diminish how good it was first. Still, it's a caveat. And my third villain is from an ongoing series from The Boys.
Yeah.
And that's Homelander.
That's a good option.
a little tie in with Xena also, because Anthony Starr does appear in
Baby Anthony Starr.
Yes. Be open and honest about this, I did not finish watching the latest season, season four, because I was incredibly bored by the first episode, and I can't do this. But during the first three seasons that I did watch, he was really, really good, and basically my favorite thing about the entire series.
No, he's incredible. And again, like, I think about it's he's a very well-written character, but I would say like at least 50% of why we love Homelander is how Anthony Starr plays him.
Mm-mm.
He's really driving it home. Like he has to earn some award for that. I think he hasn't yet, but
he won't.
he won't. Also because The Boys is very much not an award sort of show.
No, not
palatable
really
to critics, but just in terms of acting, just pure craftsmanship of it all.
Mm-mm-mm.
He really deserves it.
No, absolutely. He is fantastic. So that's my list. Here it is.
A good list. again, like Homelander is also the one that comes to my mind when I think like the best villains of TV, because that's one of the few shows that I watch that has a very distinctive villain, and oh boy, is he a distinctive villain.
Mm-hmm.
So let's try to go through mine, which is very shaky. Because all of those people are, I'm not sure that they're villains, but let's. So first one is from my favorite show, The Newsroom. As I mentioned, like the show doesn't have a clear villain, but if we would just dissect it in a drama class and we would put someone in that spot, that would be Leona Lansing, a great character. Jane Fonda plays her. She's this billionaire, self-made woman, like this very tough lady that gives a lot of hard times to the main characters, but she has her points. And she's very charismatic, and I love her. And as is with most series that go on for more than one season, like in season two, she's already much more sympathetic and likable and kind of drops her villain role in how the chips fall down. But season one, I would say that she's a villain. So the next one I don't want to talk too much about because I don't want to give too much away, but Harmony from Severance. I would say that at least for now, it seems that she's playing this sort of villainous role. Although, like, again, the true villain there is not her. I would say it's the system. But she's very scary in the way that, like, Nurse Ratched is scary in Flight of the Cuckoo's Nest. She has this dominating stare and this sort of gentle voice that tells you that she can crush your bones, that sort of thing.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Right? Mm. And the last one is, like, again, not sure that he's a villain, but Gabriel from Good Omens. Season 1, he can be perceived as a villain. And season 2, he's sort of one of the main characters.
He's just there, honestly. Like, he's just not doing anything.
Yeah, but, like, he's the MacGuffin, let's say. Season 1, he's a villain.
Yeah.
Season 2, he's the MacGuffin. But in season...
I think that's fair.
Right? Like, in season 1, I think you could constitute him as a villain. And, like, again, I would say that part of the charm that he exudes there is the actor. So this is my very short and pathetic sort of kind of villains
list. I feel like it's fine. Like, what's your problem?
I guess my problem is that throughout... When you're watching a series, it's very hard to kind of pin down one character that, like, oh, this is the villain of the series, at least those kind of series that I like to watch, apart from The Boys again. But transitioning to our episode and, like, the show that we're talking about here, it's actually cool how much screen time Callisto gets in this first few episodes when she appears, in stating that, oh yeah, folks, this is our villain. Just, like, forget every other baddie that you saw. This is the main one.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's dive into the episode. Episode 22, called Callisto. So we open with this really creepy shot where the camera pans past some burning bits of village houses, and we see this super blonde kid
who looks like he could be Scandinavian blonde.
Yeah. aged maybe 5 or 6, and he's just standing there looking completely deadpan. And then we hear some screams, and the kid turns around to check what's happening, still, like, no expression on his face. And what's happening is that everyone in the village is getting extremely murdered. We also see someone riding a horse, and that person looks quite familiar. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's the same person who shot that poison dart at Xena in the previous episode. So someone knocks the kid down, but doesn't kill him. So the kid is just kind of chilling on the ground, watching the destruction of his village, watching some corpses
fall as you down. Do
yes. And the mystery person then comes down from the horse, walks towards one of the villagers that's fighting back, and at that moment the camera finally pans up enough for us to see the mystery person's face. And you and I, and I mean you all, as everyone listening, you and I already know, of course, that it's Callisto, but I'd say they've done a pretty good job kind of hyping her up and keeping this intrigue going.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very nice establishing shot of, like, one of the main characters of the show, and, like, really, as we said in the previous episode, like, that's the main villain of the show.
But I would like to pause here for a moment, and I want to discuss Callisto's outfit. Because, so, as I mentioned in the previous episode, it's quite similar to Xena's, but I'd say it's definitely sluttier. So, my favorite detail, personally, is that there are these little strips of leather going over her boobs, above her bra. So it kind of sort of looks like the bra has these very large cutouts. I don't even think I've seen that in any real life outfits, and I'm quite into it.
Yeah, it's nice. It's kind of like her bra has a, like, her armor bra has a lingerie quality to it. yeah, it looks cool and it's very much in character. And it's interesting how, like, not even here, but like over the years, how we see Callisto, and she's both like weirdly sexualized as like any female in the show at some point, and also kind of is asexual, I would say.
True.
Right? Like, yeah, the only time she has sex, it's with Ares, and she's in Xena's body at that point.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Yep. Brace yourselves for that one.
Oh, I'm looking forward. Yes, so, yeah, daddy.
There's going to be a lot of body swaps. So she's
right. Yeah.
Body at that point, and we know why Ares is into that. And I think that
I think we all understand why Ares is into that.
That's not a mystery. But I think she's into that because she knows how bad it's going to be for Xena, and she just wants to torture her. So she gets off on like emotionally and physically torturing Xena, and I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So for some reason, the villager that Callisto walks up to does not notice that she's clearly dressed as a warrior, like, albeit a very slutty one, or that she does not seem to be concerned in the slightest by what's happening in the village, or actually that she's a complete stranger to him. Like, what person would come to a village in the middle of it being attacked?
Oh, hi, just passing by.
Yeah. Because he doesn't notice any of that stuff. Because he yells, "Run, woman! They're trying to kill us all!" at her. And Callisto responds, "Trying? I think we're succeeding!" And immediately kills the villager, which honestly does not seem like a huge loss to the world based on his extremely limited deductive skills.
That's sort of a Darwin Award, that's true.
So Callisto stabs the guy with her sword, and then she pulls the sword out and just kind of looks at the blood covering it, marveling for a moment. It's a cute little psychopath moment for her.
Yeah, she has a lot of those. And yeah, upon this rewatch, I really enjoy those little characteristics that Hudson Lake gives Callisto. Like, she has a very distinctive evil laugh that's borderline dorky. She's like, like, I cannot imitate it, but it's like, it's clearly a villain's laugh, but it's also a little stupid, and I kind of like it. It's like very girly. Yeah, she has that sort of innocent, childlike quality to her crazy, and it's going to be consistent throughout the episode. It's not the most unusual choice, but I like how, from the very beginning, how consistent she is with it.
Yeah, it works for me also. So Callisto then sees that one of her soldiers is about to kill an older woman, and she stops him, ordering him to let her live. She then turns to the older woman, calling her an old crone, and tells her to spread the news about what she did to the village. And the woman is like, "Who are you?" And Callisto's like, "I am Xena, warrior princess." And then gives us her best slow-mo evil laughter that you just described.
Shocker. The ending of the scene was a little weird for me because I was sure that first, when we started, I was sure that the blonde child was Callisto, and we're starting off with a backstory. Then I thought that the blonde child is going to be the only one surviving, but no. But like, the blonde child is also going to be significant to the story, so I guess it's fine. They just tricked me.
Yeah, I think we do get flashbacks for Callisto later on, no?
I think not in this episode.
No, but I mean, like, generally.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
Yeah. So then we have the intro, and after the intro, we see the actual Xena, who's hanging out in some tavern, as she does, sipping on wine, and there's this scruffy-looking dude
Yeah, he looks like he's in a 90s boy band or something, judging by his hair.
Yeah, about that. I'll mention something about that. So okay. There's a scruffy looking dude next to her, and he asks the innkeeper for wine. And Xena just hands him hers, saying that he looks like he needs it more than her, which is a bit shady, but okay. And so you mentioned the hair, but like, I think for many of us, the guy himself looks quite familiar. And that's because we saw him literally 10 episodes ago. He's the Black Wolf's boyfriend in, well, the Black Wolf. So and they didn't even bother to change his hair from that episode. Like, it's the same hair as it was back then. So he introduces himself as Melas. And Xena hesitates for a moment, but tells him her name as well. And of course, once he hears that name, his eyes widen and he attacks her.
Yeah, and it goes like this. Xena? Warrior Princess? Like, it's her surname or something.
Yeah, so Xena obviously very easily fends him off and points her sword at him, and he tells her to go ahead and murder him the way she murdered his son. And Xena's like, huh? And Melas tells her that the older woman from his village told him what happened, and actually everyone around Corinth is talking about an army led by Xena destroying everything. So Xena calls Gabrielle and they're about to leave, but Melas tells Xena that he'll find her and he'll kill her. And she's like, you do you, girl, but I ain't the one you want.
That's true, yeah. I mean, that is a very predictable sort of dialogue. I think I liked the choices that Lucy Lawless makes in this scene and the scenes that follow, because she's not as outraged as like one should be when, I don't know, someone is impersonating you and doing atrocities in your name. Because I think that the thought process is like, yeah, I didn't do those things, but I did other things that were just as bad. So I think that one of the themes of this episode is Xena's guilt, and I liked how Lucy Lawless kind of started acting it out from the very beginning before we kind of mention it.
Yeah. So later on, Xena and Gabrielle are walking on some hill and discussing their plan to go to Corinth in the hopes of finding out what the fuck is actually going on. And they run into a group of villagers who are like, oh my god, is that Xena? And Xena and Gabrielle brace for a moment, but the villagers are just scared shitless. Nobody's even thinking about attacking them. And among those villagers, there's one with a very recognizable hat. That's right, folks. We're introduced to Callisto and Joxer in the same episode.
Right, yeah.
So, of course, Xena doesn't pay any extra attention to him, instead telling Gabrielle that back in her warlord days, she actually enjoyed those looks of fear on people's faces. So Joxer takes things into his own hands, and he comes up to Xena, introducing himself as Joxer the Mighty. And I don't know whether that's something that the costume department did, or whether it was added in post by Foley, but Joxer's outfit sounds like it's made out of tin or something like that. So like a light and hollow metal. It's a very, very nice touch, I think, you know, conveying something about the character just by virtue of what their clothing sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, and how it feels. That's definitely true. Also, like his pointy hat reminds me of Don Quixote a little bit. Right, that's the first time I'm kind of thinking about it, but I think that there is something in Jox's character rooted in Don Quixote, like this ridiculous and sometimes tragic, but also kind of weirdly noble thing about him that I think it could have been, right?
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
It's a new and interesting way to think about Joxer that didn't occur to me before.
I cannot believe I'm talking about Joksu like that. He was so annoying to me about around the time when I watched it for the first time. But like, yeah, now I'm seeing him in a different light.
Yeah. I'm curious how that will progress. So Joksu is trying to offer his services to Xena, saying that he's a warrior of some repute. And Gabrielle chuckles and says that she's never actually heard of him. And he swats her away, saying, "I wasn't talking to you, little girl." He keeps doubling down, too, saying that he gets depressed if he doesn't spill any blood for a couple of days. And he keeps going on and on about how much he loves blood. And at some point, Xena has enough. So she grabs him by the nose really hard and tells him to keep talking if he enjoys the sight of blood so much. So that does the trick for now, and he leaves them alone for a bit.
Yeah. I think on a normal day, Xena would be more amused by that than irritated, but yeah, she's had enough for today.
Yeah. Later on, Xena and Gabrielle are walking, and Xena hears something weird just in time, because Melas jumps out of a tree and tries to attack her with a knife. But of course, just as the last time, she defeats him and 2 seconds. And she then ties him to the tree and tells him he's a slow learner. Ouch. And Gabrielle very sweetly puts a rolled up rag behind his head and tells him that, well, you know, were Xena actually the monster that he thought she was, she would have probably just killed him by now. But Melas doesn't want to hear it and again vows to kill Xena someday.
Yeah, and as Xena and Gabrielle leave him, Gabrielle says in her best inspirational porn voice, "Goodbye, Melas. I hope you find peace someday." Like, he's in the wrong here, but even I rage about this. It's a very irritating phrase.
Yeah, I mean, more of that is coming from Gabrielle, so...
Oh my god, yeah. She straight up wants to be a life coach at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get to that.
So we then see a bunch of crucified people somewhere. We don't know where this is. And there are more people around them, screaming. It seems like Xena and Gabrielle just basically stumble upon them. And then they immediately jump into the action. It turns out that this is yet another village being raided. And Xena just jumps right in, starts fighting the attackers. At some point, she throws her chakram. And it hits a couple of guys, then ricochets, and then is caught, but not by Xena. Kalista is the one who catches it, and we see Xena through the middle of the chakram. It's a really, really cool shot.
Yeah.
And Kalista's like, "You want it? Come and get it." And Xena charges at her on Argo with a sword in hand.
Yeah, it's once again establishing the villain, right? Because no other baddie, however good they are, could catch the chakram. Like,
yeah,
immediately understand. Sure, right? This is serious.
Both that this is serious and that there's some kind of personal relationship between the two that makes it more significant. Like the fact that, you know, she's kind of framing Xena with the chakram.
That's true. And also, like, it's very obvious, I think even by now, that Kalista is this evil doppelganger that Xena has. So basically, yeah, she's mirroring all her skills.
Yeah.
She's her shadow, in a way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Very, very much into archetypes in this episode.
Yeah, why not?
Mm-hmm.
So Kalista also charges at Xena with a sword and manages to even give Xena a tiny cut on her arm. And Kalista tells Xena that she's as good as Xena is because Xena made her. So kind of continuing what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, this is when Xena realizes that it was Kalista who shot her with a poison dart. I don't know why, but like this is when it hits her. They charge at each other again, this time kind of jousting style with flagpoles.
Straight up, yeah.
Yeah. And they hit each other, but of course both do like 600 somersaults in the air and land perfectly on their feet. And then once they land, Xena's like, what do you mean I made you? And Callisto asks her whether she remembers Syrah. And then she immediately hits Xena, jumps on her horse, and rides away.
Yeah, and when Callisto mentions Syrah, we see on Xena's face that, oh shit, like something happened there. Xena also remembers.
Yeah. And at that point, Xena notices that Gabrielle is fighting some soldier, and she runs towards her to help.
Again, like, might I add that judging by the outfit, the soldier has a sidekick in some dominatrix's dungeon, because he's dressed in leather pants. That's standard. Most baddies are dressed in leather pants. But his top is basically just an armored sleeve and a leather strip across his bare chest. He kind of looks hot.
Isn't that kind of a standard gladiator outfit?
I mean, yeah, it's not unheard of, but like usually those like 20 people army guys, they have, I don't know, like some sort of chest armor, and this guy is just bare chested with like this one leather strip.
So Xena immediately disarms the guy, and she uses her signature enhanced interrogation technique to find out a few things. So she finds out Callisto's name, what her connection with Syrah is. So the soldier tells Xena that Callisto's family died there. Xena also asks what Callisto wants and finds out that she wants the world to see Xena as a demon and then to defeat Xena in combat. The soldier also spills that Callisto is planning to murder the Delphi Oracle at Apollo's sacrifice the following day and blame that on Xena. And just before undoing her five-finger death punch thing, Xena tells the soldier to give a message to Callisto, and the message is that Xena made her and she will destroy her.
Good. Glad we all found that out, but I would say that it's worth noting that usually it takes about 30 seconds for a character to start dying from our favorite five-finger death punch. And here the soldier, he manages to just, like, spit out all of this expositional exposition. I'm really surprised he's still alive, because it was, like, a very long scene, and every time I was thinking, like, okay, it's over. Like, no, he says something else, or Xena says something else. Like, this dude should be dead.
Yeah, I also thought that. Huh? So Xena starts walking away when Melas appears again, and Xena's like,
favorite character.
Yeah, and Xena's like, be careful, I'm in a bad mood. I love that. Yeah. Like a naughty child, you know. But Melas says that he saw everything, and now he knows that it wasn't Xena who killed his son. And then he asks her whether he can join Xena to help her kill Callisto. And Xena's like, dude, clearly I'm going to be the one helping you not get killed, but sure, whatever.
Yeah. It's very clear that at this point, Xena just agrees to babysit him.
Yep.
So like a surprising amount of straight dudes want to join Xena and Gabby in this episode. And like, they're understandably not happy about it.
Yeah. I don't know. Do we get some love stories for Joxer, don't we?
Yeah, we get his, he's like married to one of the Xena's doppelgangers by the end of the show. And has a son who surprisingly hot. More to come in season 6.
Oh god.
I'm really looking forward to discussing season 6 with you, because like so many new things for you.
Like I remember nothing, essentially. Cool. Looking forward. Back at her camp, Callisto is practicing fighting, but also her balance beam skills. Like, I was almost expecting her to do a wolf turn at some point. Been watching a lot of the Olympics, so I'm like, yeah, I know this move. I saw Simone Biles do this. So then the soldier who Xena interrogated arrives, and we learn that actually Callisto instructed him to tell Xena everything. And Callisto even guesses correctly that Xena left some heroic message to her, which is really cute.
Yeah, I like how, like, she left a message on this warrior, like, on the answering machine.
And then the other soldiers then bring in Joxer, who they've captured hanging outside of the camp. And Joxer says that he has something to offer to the warrior queen.
Nicely played.
yeah, and the flattery works. And Callisto is like, okay, I'm listening. So Joxer offers his services as a warrior. And Callisto quips that he looks more like an idiot than a warrior. Baby. And Joxer does think on his feet here. He says that he cultivates that image to make himself look less threatening so that no one expects him to turn out to be deadly, which, like, I see the logic behind that. It's not true, but, you know, I'll give that to Joxer.
Yeah, I think Gabrielle also used the same argument once, like, oh, I just look like an innocent little girl, but I'm actually a killer.
Yeah, wasn't that when she was shopping for the boob dagger?
Yes.
Oh, good times. So Callisto kind of considers that, and she tells Joxer that if he can bring Gabrielle to her, Joxer would be allowed to join her crew as a warrior, and he obviously accepts and leaves.
Yeah, it's interesting that Callisto mentions, like, Xena is traveling with someone, and Joxer is like, yeah, an annoying little blonde. It's so funny to me, knowing that he's going to be head over heels in love with Gabrielle for several seasons. That's kind of sweet.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, there's a love story coming, like, one-sided, but...
Yeah, too bad they didn't get him a nice little Gabrielle clone to marry.
Yeah, like, there are certain characters that clone themselves. Like, Xena is that character, Joxer is that character. I think that's it.
Yeah, and then there are characters that play multiple roles, like... Yeah.
Carl?
Like Carl.
Yeah. Oh, there were three naked Gabrielles at some point. Remember?
Well, yes, but that's different.
Yeah. Still love that episode.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that one for sure. Once Joxer leaves, Callisto wonders out loud whether he'd be able to do it, but she decides that after all, it doesn't matter, because soon the Delphi Oracle would be found with Xena's chakram in her skull.
Yeah, she even throws the chakram, and again, it ricochets a few times, and it hits a watermelon, just, like, slicing it almost in half, like, foreshadowing what's going to happen to Oracle's skull, according to Callisto.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Gabrielle and Melas are making camp for the night, but Melas can't sleep, and says that he actually hasn't for days since his son died. The only thing he wants is revenge. Mm-hmm. And Gabrielle kind of shrugs and leaves his side to go to Xena to ask her whether she wants to talk about Syra. And Xena tells her that it was just a regular village raid when a fire broke out. And because it was very windy, the whole village burned down very quickly, with whole families trapped in their houses, burned alive.
Yeah, that's important, I guess. Sorry to interrupt, but, like, that's important, I guess, because we know that Xena, even when she was a warrior, she kind of had some sort of code of honor, so she didn't kill innocent women and children. that kind of was like a no-no for her.
Right, but like this was her army, and
yeah,
it was a village raid, and like think something caught on fire, clearly as a consequence of that raid.
No, definitely that she is to blame, but it's like also even for Xena that was an unusual occurrence. That's right. What I mean.
Yeah, fair enough. So yeah, there were very few survivors, but obviously Callisto was one of them. And Gabrielle wonders out loud about how that cycle of revenge can ever end. And she asks Xena not to turn into a monster if anything happens to her, to Gabrielle. Because, as she says, the way out of that vicious cycle is through love and forgiveness.
Oh, that's sweet. But also, I want to mention that she says, like, look at Malus. Like, he is consumed with hate. Like, he's a good person, but, like, look at him. He's, like, so hateful now, and Melis is sitting, like, a meter away from them, clearly hearing everything.
Yeah, I love that. It's really cool. So Xena chuckles at the love and forgiveness thing, and she hugs Gabrielle and tells her not to ever change. And Gabrielle then, through tears, asks Xena to promise. And Xena, who's actually also crying by that moment, says that she promises. It's a very sweet moment.
It is. And it's a very intimate moment also. Mm. Like, again, I might imagine that sort of talk between two friends, two very close friends. But something about how Gabrielle, for example, like wipes the tear of Xena's cheek, and like how mm-hmm. she almost kisses her shoulder at some point, mm. or at least like, I don't know, like has her cheek on Xena's shoulder. Like something about that tells me that they're girlfriends at this point.
Yeah, I think so. The next day, Xena, Gabrielle, and Melis arrive to Delphi and split up to search for Callisto. And as Gabrielle is walking through some hallway, Joxer appears with a net and attempts to capture her, but she fights him off really, really easily and even knocks him off his feet, like almost knocks him out. Yeah. It seems like Gabrielle is more annoyed with him than anything, and she tells him to stay down because she's got stuff to do.
Yeah, it's really satisfying to see how far Gabrielle has come and how now she's like sort of an experienced fighter, like in comparison to Joxer anyway.
Yeah, like, the bar is low, but she is above it. So we then see the ceremony, and we also find out that the Oracle is incredibly hot. Like, I wanted to find out who played her, but she's not credited because she doesn't have any speaking lines. It's heartbreaking. Like, she kind of reminds me of, you know, like if Pocahontas from the Disney movie was a real woman, she looks kind of like that. So, just as planned, Callisto throws Xena's chakram during the ceremony and tries to kill the Oracle this way, but Xena throws a dagger at the chakram just in time to kind of divert it.
Yeah, and I love how Callisto is pissed off now that things are not going her way, and she hisses to let everyone know how angry she is. That's iconic. I want to do that.
Yeah, she hisses a few times throughout the episode. It's so good. So Callisto runs out into the city, jumps on her horse, and Xena follows her, and they ride out to some sandy area. I think it's the same place they filmed the chariot race in episode 2. And eventually Xena jumps from Argo onto Callisto's horse and kind of tackles her onto the ground, and there's barely any struggle at that point, so Xena just ties Callisto up, puts her on Argo, and they walk. Xena walks the two horses together and talks to Callisto as she's doing that, starting by telling her that Argo won't obey her, and if Callisto doesn't stop hitting Argo, Xena will break her ankles.
That's fair.
That is fair. Callisto then asks Xena what her deal is. Did she just decide to stop being evil? And Xena says, yeah, pretty much, and also says that she's sorry. And Kalisa understandably has trouble accepting the apology, and she indicates that by spitting at Xena.
Yeah. She's also very sassy and sarcastic in the scene. She's like, Oh, you're nice now. Well, great. Now we can be the best of friends. And yeah, I start to remember why I loved Kalisto so much when I was a teenager and watching it for the first time. I really loved the sarcastic characters.
Yeah. It surprised me not at all. I think she has this like teenage spirit in her. So at that point, Gabrielle runs to them and says that Melos has fully lost it and has assembled a lynch mob. Mm-hmm. And Kalisto says she's not afraid to die. But she asks Xena if she herself has ever been tried for her crimes or been at the mercy of an angry mob. And while the former hasn't happened, the latter certainly has. Like, we've seen that in a previous episode. Not the previous episode, one of the episodes this season. So Xena pauses and asks Kalisto what would happen if she were let go. And Gabrielle is like, Whoa! When I said love and forgiveness, this is not what I meant. And Kalisto only makes the situation more amusing by saying that if she's let go, she will dedicate her life to destroying everything Xena cares about and killing everyone she loves.
Yeah, she's like, your friends, your family, your horse, your record collection, your saved Pinterest boards, your favorite restaurant. I'm going to destroy it all.
So, Xena just takes Kalisto back to the city and puts her into the town jail while the angry mob chants, death to Kalisto, death to Kalisto. Yeah. We then cut to sometime later. And we see that Xena is standing guard outside of Kalisto's cell. And Kalisto's taunting her by saying that they could both hear the angry mob coming and asking Xena how many of them she will kill. I gotta say, like, this is a genuinely interesting dilemma for Xena to be put in. Mm-hmm. Like, kudos to the writers. Really enjoy that. And Kalisto also adds that she's a painful reminder of what Xena used to be and how she can never leave it behind. Which is, I just praise them, but here, like, the writers are being a bit like, let us explain to you the exact symbolism that we're trying to do here. But I still like it.
No, it's good. And of course, Kalisto does it, as they say now, for the plot, meaning like, her motivations in this episode are very much rooted in terms of, like, we want to make Xena's life as uncomfortable as we can as writers, so let Kalisto do stuff. And that's kind of like an easy way out when you have an unpredictable character who's like a bit of a psychopath, because they can just start doing stuff all of a sudden.
A bit of a
psychopath. But I mean, She has emotions, so I guess she's a bit of a psychopath.
I think psychopaths can have emotions, just not certain specific ones like empathy.
I guess, yeah. Not empathy, yeah, I guess. No. Anyway, I don't know if we can correctly diagnose Kalisto. But I agree that it still works in the scene. Like, she's very convincing with her little voice saying, let them have me, nobody would blame you. And like, also, she's like childlike about it, and she's very creepy, right?
Yeah. It's done really, really well. And the both, I think, the writing here and the acting, it really works well together.
Mm-hmm. Also, another thought that I was remembering the scene, and mm-hmm. I think that's interesting that, like, Kalisto is again, like, with the doppelganger theme, like, Kalisto is always fidgeting. She's always like rocking back and forth. She has like those different expressions. She's like always doing different gestures, and Xena is very still usually, and especially in this scene.
No, Kalisto is our ADHD queen.
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
So outside the jail, Joxer makes another pathetic attempt at capturing Gabrielle. And she breaks his nose. sits him down and asks him why the hell he's bothering her. Joxer says that he comes from a long line of warriors and he's just trying to follow that, which is a bit heartbreaking. And Gabrielle's like, yeah, I think you should consider a career change. And Joxer tries to capture her again, but surprise, he's very bad at it again.
Yeah, again, knowing that we know now about the character, and I assume that at that point, writers also didn't know that about the character. But he has two twin brothers. One of them is an assassin, and the other one is a Liberace dancer.
What the fuck is a Liberace dancer?
I can try to find his costume for you. Okay, let me send it to you now, and you'll understand why. And we'll post it in our Instagram stories or post or whatever.
Oh my god, that is Liberace,
right?
I mean, it also gives Filip Kirkorov.
Yes. Oh.
For those of you who aren't familiar with the Russian-speaking world, Lemtov from the Eurovision movie.
Oh, Lion of Love.
Aw. So where were we? Yeah. So we then see Melos throw a torch into Kalisto's cell, quickly lighting it on fire. And for a moment, Kalisto is very excited to die exactly the way her family did. Mm-hmm. And is like fully on board with that, but Xena grabs the key from her cell and opens it, and of course Kalisto immediately attacks her and traps her in the burning cell. Yeah. So much for defeating Xena in combat, which was apparently the plan.
Oh well.
So we then find out that Xena should have probably just let Kalisto face the angry mob, because it's the most useless mob ever. They just all stand there and watch as Kalisto kicks Melos, gets on her horse, grabs Gabrielle, and rides away with her hostage.
I mean, out of all the scenes with villagers, this is one of the most realistic ones, I feel like.
Yes. Aww. So, meanwhile, Xena is trapped in this burning cell, and she breaks out of her cell by running up the wall and jumping through the roof. There is a roof. She just jumps through it. Like, she makes a hole into the roof by virtue of just jumping through it. Like, I mean, I guess it's Xena, so it is to be expected.
I think she already did that. And I think it was in the Black Wolf episode. So
there was a skylight in that episode. Here, there's a roof. She just jumps through it.
I mean, it's 10 episodes later, so level up, I guess.
So Melos greets Xena by saying that Gabrielle was right when she said that his lust for revenge would lead to people getting hurt. And Xena's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Who got hurt? And he's like, oh yeah, so Kalisto kind of captured Gabrielle. And Xena's like, for fuck's sake! And hops onto Argo and rides away.
Yeah, like, the theme of tonight's episode is useless men. Because we're about to come back to Joxer. More on that later.
Yeah. So back at Kalisto's camp, we see that Kalisto suspended Gabrielle like maybe 10 meters above the ground with a rope tied around her chest. So we also see someone bring Joxer in again, and Kalisto says that he proved himself useless. She does still offer one last opportunity for him to prove himself. She tells her guys to lower Gabrielle to the ground, gives Joxer a dagger, and tells him to slit Gabrielle's throat. And of course, he can't do it, so Kalisto orders her guys to chain him up. So sometime later, Xena arrives to Kalisto's camp, and Kalisto tells her that this is it, the fight to the death. And just to make things more interesting, she says herself, she suspends Gabrielle again, and she positions a torch right underneath the rope holding Gabrielle up, so it's gonna burn slowly. And Xena decides to try to free Gabrielle right away. She does that by climbing up a ladder that's just standing up on its own, balancing. So, like, it's not, you know how ladders work, dear listener. You lean it against something. So imagine if you didn't lean the ladder against anything. It looks incredibly hard.
Yeah. So
before she can free Gabrielle, Xena is attacked by Callisto. So she falls until the ladder kind of latches itself smack in between two walls, becoming a sort of a bridge between them. And Xena and Callisto fight on it for some time until it snaps in half. So Xena slides down and then immediately climbs back up to go get Gabrielle. And there's more ladder acrobatics, because both Xena and Callisto get on ladders and then spin themselves around while on top of the ladder to kind of walk them across the gap between two walls. It looks basically impossible.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to describe. You're doing an awesome job. I'm sure some of our listeners are already lost. Not that it's not entertaining. It is. But yeah, it's a very much what the fuck is happening scene.
Yeah, yeah. And there's more of that coming. Because Xena, by just throwing things, constructs a kind of a seesaw out of two ladders leaning one against another, and then a third one balancing on top. And so she gets on top of it, she tries to tilt it upwards toward Gabrielle so that she can jump down onto it. But then, of course, Callisto jumps onto the other end instead. And so now there's Xena and Callisto on the opposite ends of this improvised seesaw. Again, basically, there's no way that something like this could work, but hey, it details. Xena then makes a galaxy brain move by, listen carefully, throwing the chakram to cut the rope holding Gabrielle, then immediately jumping super high up into the air, thus just leaving Callisto on it and tilting the seesaw towards Callisto, then landing back, sending Callisto up into the air herself, while Gabrielle lands onto the spot on the seesaw where Callisto was. Yes, this is all very complicated, and it's kind of a thing that makes even less sense when it's described as opposed to watched. But hey, we have to go through this somehow.
I'm enjoying every second of it. Please go on.
So, like, last time we saw Callisto in this, she was kind of catapulted up into the air. So she grabs the end of the rope that Gabrielle was suspended with, the one that Xena cut with her chakram. And now Gabrielle and Xena are standing on the opposite ends of the seesaw. Then, because now Callisto is the one in danger of falling because the rope burns down, one of her guys tries grabbing the rope and kind of saving it from being snapped by the burning torch. But Callisto stops him. She's like, no, no, let it burn. And very soon after that, the rope does snap and Callisto falls, but Xena catches her.
Yeah, this whole episode, it seems like, is basically a couple of Callisto's attempts to off herself, but something always gets in the way.
Soon after, we see that Callisto and her crew are all in chains, and Xena tells Gabrielle that she saved Callisto because that was the right thing to do. And then the camera pans towards Callisto, and we see her smile and say, "The right thing to do? That's what they think." And the episode ends kind of abruptly, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes as the audience, we know that that was not the right thing to do. And in this case, it definitely was not the right thing to do.
Mm.
We know that things are coming. Like, sometimes you just need to kill the big villain boss when you have the chance, but...
Yeah, but I think in the end, we as the audience gain from the fact that she wasn't.
No, that's true. That's true. She's a very entertaining villain.
And the fun credits at the end say, Joxer's nose was not harmed during the production of this motion picture. However, his crossbow was severely damaged.
Is that a dick joke? I mean, I know that his crossbow was literally severely damaged by Gabrielle.
Yeah, there was a crossbow that, yeah, but now that you say it, it must be, no?
I think that's a dick joke.
It has to be. Oh no, it didn't even occur to me. No! So,
yeah,
what was the gayest moment of the episode for you?
Yeah, I think that we would both agree that this scene by the fire when they're talking and Gabrielle says, promise me, and they're hugging and they're both crying, that's very much two people in love. You cannot tell me otherwise.
Yeah, and generally hugging and crying is gay, I'd say.
Yeah.
So yes, I agree. It is that moment for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
And how many chakrams out of 10 would you give this episode?
That's a toughie. I would say it's a good episode overall. I'm hesitating between 8 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that it's a 7 for me. Like, it had some solid moments. It's very watchable. It's not that predictable. But... just for me, it was lacking that extra something that would make the episode like worthy of an 8. But I think that it's a solid 7 for me.
Okay, interesting. Because I was actually hesitating between an 8 and a 9.
Okay.
Like, I thought it was very strong. The themes were very strong. There was like an introduction of two really, really important characters in a way that was very meaningful and really painted a good picture of who they are as people and where they're coming from, and kind of establishing what they're going to be progressing from as their backstory. So I thought that like it was actually a super, super strong episode. I'm actually tempted to just give it a 9.
You could. It's the first time where you give a higher score than me.
That is not true at all. That is so not true.
Okay.
It happened for episode 5, The Path Not Taken, the one with the two half-naked chicks.
Okay.
It happened for episode 15, A Fistful of Dinars, with a shaky bridge economy. And it happened now. So no, it's not unheard of. Happens.
Okay.
Every 10 episodes or so.
Okay, cool. But yeah, I agree that it's a solid episode. I guess it was just like lacking in some X factor for me. Just an emotional reaction. But yeah, I also liked it. And I am looking forward to all the other Callisto episodes that we're going to get.
Yes, and I think we're going to get another one very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly the next episode is going to involve her as well. It is going to be episode 23 called Death Mask.
Mm.
So we'll see what that all is about. In the meantime, though, feel free to check out our Instagram at Xena Made Me Gay.
Sorry for being absent that long, but let's just call it a summer vacation.
Yes. Hope you understand. Thank you for sticking with us. All right. Take care and bye.
Bye.